Are you ready?
Massacre.
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 Don't you love it?
Oh yeah, coming at you in stereo, it's Massacre Radio, baby. Episode, 48 to be exact. Hey, thank you so much for joining us. The studio is all set for broadcast excellence. You know, the holidays are always busy, but we were able to procure a guest all the way from South Africa, which is a full 7 hours ahead of where I'm currently broadcasting from, as yet again, Massacre Radio spans the globe. And effectively, might I add. So kick back, light up a fancy cigarette or two, and let this radio transmission do the heavy lifting. It's Massacre Radio, baby. You know the drill. Come on!
This is Massacre Radio.
Próximamente después de Radio Massacre, ella te caso solo para dejarte con garo. ¿Qué puedes hacer para remediar a una perra engañosa? Todo eso y más aquí en WKMA Cleveland, una estación a hacha de dos.
And now, Andy.
I don't use foul language, and I don't like to hear anyone else use it either.
Pussy, pecker, peckerhead.
No one has ever explained what harm dirty words do. I know what words I think are okay to use.
Cornhole and dingleberry.
I don't need the FCC to tell me what they are.
Motherfucker tits.
And which ones are not.
Taint, nookie, snatch, box.
They diminish the quality of all our lives by just a little bit.
Motherfucker is a duplication.
Most people just don't want it.
Fuck is the root form, motherfucker being derivative.
I know all the four-letter words.
Jism.
Language is one of the best tools ever invented for anything.
Hey, motherfucker, how did you get my phone number?
English is by far the best language.
Cunt, cocksucker, motherfucker.
Fleeting expletives.
They call them bad.
Dirty words may not be much. We should be careful using it, though.
I'm Scott Pelley.
Massacre Radio. Welcome back. You're listening to Massacre Radio on WKMA Cleveland and HD2 Station. Well, 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 just as expected, looks like today's guest is calling in right now. Let me go ahead and pick that up. All the way from Cape Town, South Africa, it's my pleasure to welcome in Ryan Krueger. Ryan, how's everything going for you, man? Thanks for your time today.
All good, man. All good. It's been a crazy week since the release of Street Trash on Amazon and Apple and stuff. And, obviously in the States, we've had the 35 millimeter screenings and stuff. So, yeah, it's been really awesome. And the feedback has been, it's just been very cool.
Very cool indeed. Ryan, of course, is a filmmaker with numerous credits under his belt, including Friedberry from 2020. And you just heard him mention it, folks, the more recent Street Trash. Ryan, I want to start there. When did you realize you were going to remake the 80s classic Street Trash and revisualize it, bring it to a whole new audience here in 2024? How did that all come about for you?
Yeah, it was one of those things. I didn't plan it. I didn't go out my way to write this film or anything like that. I was approached by the producers to do this film. And basically what happened was when I screened Fried Barry on Joe Bob's Last Drive-In, a lot of people were saying that I would be a good fit to do a Street Trash movie. And so their producers, got hold of me and said, would you be interested in writing a script and directing a movie? And straight away, I knew what the movie was, and I was a fan of the original. So I was straight away, I was like, I'd love to do something in that world. And as a fan, I just like, I don't want to copy it. I want to take what people enjoyed from the original film and what people liked about the original film. And as a fan, what I liked, and have that DNA of the original. So it fits into this world. So for a new audience, it can be a standalone film. And then for fans like myself, it's like, there's plenty of nods to the original film. And I think it's, I think there's definitely homage played to the original,
Without a doubt. And we'll get back to Street Trash here in just a bit. But first, Ryan, I want to know more about your background. I had read, like so many other filmmakers, you got your start when you were young, in your early teens, working the home movie circuit. Looking back now, what are some of the techniques or things that you did that have stuck with you creatively and influenced your work up until present day, would you say?
I don't know, man. I think it's one of those things where you just keep on learning. It's one of those where, I remember when I first started you know, with my camera filming all these like little films and stuff with family and friends, and spend weekends over or summers just making all these films where they were all shit. They were all fucking terrible. But every single one had like something cool about it. You know, every single one had maybe just one cool little idea or cool little effect. When you make those films and show it to people, people mention, oh, that was cool, or that was clever, or something that you discovered. And then as time goes on, you take the good thing from this movie and the cool little thing from that movie that you did, and then you try to put it all together in one film, and then you've got like a better film.
Right.
And I guess it just grows from there, and techniques and stuff. And you know, it was always a lot of the stuff. It was always like you know, dark stuff or like horror, and you know, it was always somebody fucking dying or something. And the funny thing back then, you know, at that age, it was we all had American accents for some reason. We all had American accents, and but it was fucking fun.
It says here too, Ryan, that you dove into the music scene for about 3 years and shot bands like Slipknot, and I don't know if this is a typo or not, but on your website, instead of the Misfits, it says the Misfists. Is there a band I don't know about called the Misfists?
It's a typo.
I guess the question here is, do you have any memorable stories or instances you can share from your time around music? Anything crazy come to mind, Ryan?
Oh, dude, it was literally like a 3-year project, backstage, hotel rooms, after parties, just filming like all this like crazy stuff. And it was, I couldn't even tell you, like randomly. I mean, I remember the one time there's loads of stories. Just getting thrown out of venues because the band's partying too hard. And I remember the one time they threw like a fridge out of the window.
A fridge?
And everybody got and that was like a chill band. That was like Bowling for Soup and like Simple Plan. Just hit out the venue and hit the car park outside where there was like fans and stuff, and then we all got thrown out the venue. But there's loads of stories. Just there was like so many cool things. And then there was bands that were cool that we thought would be crazy and then weren't crazy, and they were just like really fucking boring. And then there would be other bands that like surprised us and did like crazy stuff. But it was just like 3 years of partying and so many metal bands, and just like all like different bands. Yeah, it was mainly in like the metal scene.
You know, I never would have pegged Simple Plan and or Bowling for Soup to be ones to be involved in a refrigerator tossing, but I stand corrected. That is wild stuff.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's crazy. I mean, I remember even back then it was in like Kerrang! Magazine and shit like that. But it was one of those where there was just so many. I mean, even like with Andrew WK, just like slapping the shit out of each other, and there's just fucking loads. Or Juliette Lewis and the Licks, and having the paper rock paper scissors fights with her and stuff like that. There's just like, yeah, it's so many years. I actually haven't spoken about it in such a very super very very long time, but it was, you know, a lover of music and those type of bands back then. It was like, it was awesome, you know, doing all that.
Ryan, I was reading on your website, too, that you have over 100 music video credits that you've done that have come with distinguished honors. Music videos were a big deal when I was growing up, so I ask you, Ryan, what are your top 5 music videos of all time? Doesn't have to be in any particular order. What say you?
There's probably quite a lot of Bjork videos that I really fucking love, especially the, what is it, All Is Full of Love, I think it was called, the robots in Bjork. I mean, that was always a fucking really cool one. I really loved Chris Cunningham's work in music videos and stuff. You know, some of the people that did Bjork's videos were just like really cool and like really like out of the box. Music videos aren't, it's not the same as it used to be. That era, I think that time, it's very different now, don't you think, with like music videos? It's not as popular as it used to be.
It's like I was saying before, you know, when I was younger, music videos carried far more weight. I mean, they even had shows like Making the Video on MTV. That was one of my favorites. Anyway, Ryan Krueger is my guest today on Massacre Radio. He's an acclaimed writer-director. His films include Friedberry and Street Trash. which we'll get to here in just a minute. But first, I wanted to ask you, Ryan, about your tagline, a Ryan Krueger thing. Is that like your response to a Spike Lee joint? What was the impetus for that, to not only come up with it, but to use it in your work as well?
You know what? I've always loved like marketing. I've always loved like trying to get an audience and people to remember, you know, to remember your name and remember stuff. And at such an early age, I've literally always used a Ryan Krueger thing. And it was because of like Spike Lee, you know, Spike Lee joints, or, you know, Alfred Hitchcock flick or whatever. And it was like, so like, I remember like my friend actually came up with it. And he says, "Oh, what about like a Ryan Krueger thing?" And I was like, "Oh, I don't know." And then I was like, "Oh, actually, it's quite cool." And I just kept it. And that was from like 1998. And I've just kept it since then. And it's, I think it is a cool thing, because everybody, for marketing wise, it's like everybody always does remember it and bring it up. So, and it's become now when I've, you know, when I do a film or something, it's like, oh, you like, you know, when you've seen a Ryan Krueger thing, you've, you know what it is, or you know what you're up, you know, that you're in for. So yeah, it's always been a marketing thing, and it seemed to have stuck over the years, and I've just always used it, you know.
Yeah, I mean, hey, I thought it was cool the first time I saw it, which is why I wanted to ask you about it in the first place. But
it's just in a place of film, that's all it is. Instead of film, it's thing.
Yeah. Let's get to this here, Ryan. I know you're not originally from Cape Town, so I ask you, what was the filmmaking scene like when you first got into it there? And have you seen maybe a change as of late with what's being produced, either tonally or otherwise?
You know what? Growing up in England and trying to, you know, put stuff out in England, it was really hard. And every time I came on holiday, because I've got family here, every time I came on holiday to South Africa, I always got work. So even as, you know, as an actor as well. So it was one of those things where I'm like, I'm making more money you know, going to South Africa than I am making it back home. So then I ended up moving here. And then, you know, the scene when I first started out in South Africa, back then there was quite a few platforms for music videos and stuff like that. And I remember the stuff that was playing at that time. And even back then, you know, I think even back then, I wasn't great. But I remember the stuff that I saw, and I was like, fuck, if that can get on TV, then I can definitely get my stuff out there. And then and the other reason why I moved to South Africa as well was, at the time, you know, I went to the film school, and the reason why I went to the film school, it was just to get like a crew of people together, and which made, you know, my work and everybody else's work just better, you know, as a team, as a unit, you know, getting just a better DP and getting somebody better with the lights and so on, and editor and everything. And then, you know, everything just kind of came together.
There's a mention here of Quentin Tarantino and how you worked with him during the Death Proof tour. Getting a close-up look at the man himself and hearing his insight and hearing what works and what doesn't, this, that, and the other. Ryan, what was the best part about working with Quentin Tarantino? Was he all that you had expected him to be?
No, I don't know what it says there. So I met Tarantino when he did the Death Proof tour in Liverpool, and I gave him my work at that time. And it was funny because I didn't know I was going to meet him. He was there at the screening. And at that time, which I think it was, I can't remember what year it was now, but I think it was 2008 or something like that. And at the time, all my work that I had on me, in all the DVDs that I had at the time. And those DVDs were, you know, I was still young, and it was all my shit work on these DVDs. And I met him, and I had a chat with him, and he was like super nice. And I gave him my work. And the reason why I had my work on me at the time was because I was going to play it at a venue in Liverpool and have like showcase my work. So I was actually there to test out my work in this on this DVD machine. But I ended up giving all my DVDs to him just because I was like, I didn't know I was going to meet him. I was like, and give it to him to have a look at. So yeah, that was 2008.
I mean, what was his reaction when you handed him your stuff? I'm sure he gets that kind of thing often. Were you able to ask him any questions?
I asked him about, obviously, and he must have had this like a million times. I asked him about the briefcase, you know, the briefcase scenario, and he obviously smiled. And he goes, "Oh, you're gonna have to ask Actually, if I go back like 8 years before that, I met Samuel Jackson and I asked him what was in the briefcase. And he goes, oh, I asked Tarantino or Travolta. And I'm like, well, fucking out. Like, when am I going to run into those guys? And so it was 8 years after that I asked Tarantino. And then I asked him, what I thought it was. And then he just smiled and like nodded his head. But he wasn't going to tell me. And he didn't kind of tell me. He just kind of smiled and nodded his head. But when I asked him and I told him it took me 8 years to get to you, it was just kind of that like smile, but not saying anything and nodded his head.
Last thing on Tarantino, Ryan, and then we'll move on. So I take it you never heard back from him after giving him your DVDs or did you?
That's a funny thing. I got an email and I did reply and it was from a different email address. But obviously his email address, I'm obviously not going to fucking say what it is, but it's one of those where it was like one sentence back just saying, concentrate on this and this, get a DP. And then that was it. And then obviously I fucking replied, but never got a reply again.
Right.
But it was one of those where, which I'm sure, like you said, I'm sure, people like that must get like so many people asking the same questions over and over again and stuff like that. But as a filmmaker now, I think when you start out in the industry and you admire all these people, as time goes on, even as an actor, as time goes on, you end up working with people that you like or admire, and you don't expect, when it happens, it just happens. Like recently I worked as an actor, a very small part in a new Sam Rockwell movie. And I've always been a fan of Sam Rockwell, and it was just awesome just to be like, oh my God, I'm in this scene with him and I have a line with him and stuff like that. But it's, as it comes, it's never like a super crazy, like surprise. It's just, you end up doing what you're doing, and it's just, they're just like, they're also normal people as well at the same time. They just, you just admire them and you put them on this thing because you've followed the work for so long,
Ryan, let's get to your debut feature film, Fried Berry, from 2020. Specifically, I want to ask you about the actor Gary Green. What makes him so special or stick out to you in your mind? Because he was in Fried Berry and then again in Street Trash. So clearly, you kind of have an idea of what he has to offer and you like it. So what is it that sticks out about him that makes you want to keep having him in your films?
Gary, I originally met him probably 11 years ago or possibly more. I met him on set of like a student movie. And over the years, I put him in an extra in my music videos and stuff. And then it got to a certain time and I was like, okay. And it gave him a little bit of bigger, just like a little one-liner and stuff. And it's just over the years. And he was always keen and he was always determined. But, his background is he was an extra. He was an extra in movies and TV series and stuff like that. I just got him on board for my stuff. And then I had this idea for an experimental film, also called Fried Berry, before I shot the feature. And it was a 3-minute experimental film with basically a drug addict in a abandoned warehouse on his latest hits and drug. And I just thought, Gary, he's got this look. He's just got this very interesting look, that, and this presence. But that look, like, you can't think that he's somebody else. He's just got such a unique look, and I just love his look and his character. So then I asked him to do that, and we got on really well. And obviously, I got to know him a little bit more. And then, years later, I had this idea. I could have done all these other scripts that I had, and I ended up choosing Fried Berry. And I said, "Hey, Gary, I'm going to do this film, and you're going to be the lead in the film."
Now, Ryan, I had heard through the Olive Branch that Gary isn't necessarily a classically trained actor. So talk maybe about some of the difficulties that can present themselves when working with him directly on set or otherwise, if that is the case.
Working with Gary, because he's not a trained actor, it's one of those things where I've always had to like work like super, super close with him. Mm-hmm. And it sometimes takes a lot of time to do certain scenes because he's not a trained actor. And obviously I always cast Gary in the right roles where I know I can get what I want out of him to make him shine. What I mean? So I cast him in the right character, but I have like a 3-set process with him. So it's either like I'll rehearse with him way before film, and And I'll do that with him many, many times. And then we're on set. Sometimes things will change. So I rehearse with him again. When it comes to post, it's basically, again, fine-tuning. Also the edit, taking this line, taking that line. And so all the reactions and getting all the comedy beats. So he, like, listen, like Gary's always gives 110%. He will, even when we've got the take, I'll say, Gary, we've got it. No, I want to do it again. I'm like, trust me, like we got it. Like I might have took a long time to get there, but it's like on Fry Barry. So what I would do is if like the camera's here and if Gary's there, I'll say, okay, Gary, copy my face. Now do this face. Okay, now do this face and do that and then do this face. Oh, cool. And then he'll copy me as with Roland and Thurman, and then I'll turn it around on the other actor and then I get what I want from them. And then I've got all the different reactions for all the different cutaways to make it. So it's the rehearsals and then rehearsals on set. And then it's the post where I'm taking this line off the, like, maybe this take and that take. So it's, you know, all these comedy beats. So I do have to jump through many hoops to get what I want with him. And I have to work very close with him, but I have patience for him. And I think in the industry for bigger budget stuff, I don't think people have that patience, sadly, for somebody like that.
So in your mind, do you see Gary as someone you're going to try and not necessarily shoehorn into your future works, but maybe go out of your way to make sure you can get Gary in one way or the other on any future project? Yeah.
Oh, 100%. It'll always pop up. I'm actually doing a film like now with him that we've been shooting for quite a few months for now. And it's very different from Fry Barry. It's very different from Street Trash. A different, very different type of movie. It's this very arty, art house, black and white, gritty movie about an actor that can't act, that wants to be an actor.
Okay.
And he basically goes like full method. So you can only imagine what that is.
Oh, that's fantastic. I always love a good full method approach. Hey, Ryan, I wanted to get to this because I know with Fried Berry, it's a story involving alien abduction. I want to get your thoughts on this, okay? Do you truly believe in alien abductions in that they've happened the way folks like Travis Walton have said, as well as other numerous testimonies have suggested? Do you think that sort of thing is happening and or has happened, probing and all that sort of thing?
Dude, I you know what? I 100%, like, it's impossible that we are the only people here. It is impossible. You know, the galaxy and the universe is so fucking big. It is impossible for us to be the only people there. So when it comes to maybe abductions and stuff, I'm sure there's a lot of bullshit stories, but I'm sure there's probably some. And the way the world is today now, if me and you were in the middle of nowhere and we're in the desert or wherever we were, and we witnessed a UFO and we filmed it on our phone or whatever, even if we didn't, it doesn't matter anymore. So you used to hear all those stories where, you know, people went missing and this and this because they saw this. The thing is that the day and age that we live in now, it wouldn't matter. Like, we would put it online and we would say that was real and people are like, nah, it's fake. Like, it doesn't matter. So even if it is real or something like that, I'm sure the internet is full of lots of real stuff and I'm sure it's filled with a lot of fake stuff. But in this day and age, it doesn't matter what you think, because you'll always have the non-believers and you'll always have, that looks like visual effects or that looks like this. So it doesn't matter. So I'm sure there is the shit that goes down, but we're not going to believe it until it's on like Oprah or some shit like that, or Oprah's
The View,
busy sitting there speaking to an alien. And when that day does come, which it would be amazing to live and see that day, when they're doing a special and Oprah's speaking to this alien, and when they open up to the floor, it's probably like the first question what I would ask would be, you know, how did we get here? And as soon as they say, oh, we put you here, like, all religions are just like, fuck. it's just going to cause mayhem. And then you'll obviously get like Christians or whatever, and straight away they're going to be like, nah, that still didn't happen. Still, this probably happened instead. And it's just going to cause mayhem.
Well stated. Ryan Krueger is my guest today on Massacre Radio. Writer, director, actor, an all-around nice guy. We're winding things up here on Massacre Radio. But before I get you out of here, Ryan, I wanted to get back to Street Trash. What is the number one thing you are hoping the audience takes away from their viewing experience while watching your version, your rendition, your iteration of Street Trash?
I think Street Trash is just like, it's just a fun movie. You know, if, you know, I grew up, you know, in the 80s, early 90s with, you know, watching all these horror films, going to the video shop, watching these like gore, you know, gore films and melt movies and stuff like that. And it's, you know, it's, I think it's a big part of like growing up and watching those like horror films with all the prosthetics. So if you're into all those 80s movies, and if you're into the original Street Trash, and you're into all the prosthetics and goo and exploding blood and stuff like that, that, you know, it has all that stuff in it. But also, it's, it, you know, we also shot it on 35 millimeter as well, so it has that very like 80s sort of feel to it, because we shot it on film and the music. And, you know, with this, you know, I really just wanted to make a strong story and strong characters, a more of a narrative story than the, you know, than the original, and, you know, characters that you like and you go on the journey with. You know, it also has quite a bit of heart as well. Yes, it has action, and yes, it has gore, but I think the story's, you know, different from the original, but strong, and gives plenty of nods to the original. You know,
Ryan, I want to ask you about your newfound success as a director. You made Fried Berry, you complete Street Trash, you've won the awards, and it seems like it's all coming together for you and taking off at maybe the right time. Does any of this success surprise you?
Oh, no, it's amazing. I mean, I'm living what I've always wanted to do. I've always, you know, I've always wanted to be in film. And, you know, when it, that's what I kind of said before, you know, when stuff starts happening, you start working with people, obviously I'm in the moment and I appreciate it. Every time I'm on set, I'm looking around going, this is amazing, this is cool. And I really, really appreciate, and I always look at it as it's also not just my work, it's everybody else's, and we're all complimenting each other. But I surround myself with, you know, people that I admire and I love their work, and you know, I look at Street Trash or Fry Barry, and whether I'm looking at the DOP's work or the guy that's done the score or whatever, you know, it's everybody's work. We're just all complimenting each other, and it's all just fitting together. So, you know, I always do appreciate when I'm on set, and it is, yeah, obviously it is surprising, and because you just never know. You never know when it's going to happen. If somebody goes, oh, we're going to do this film, you're like, okay, yeah, well, I'll believe that when it happens. And then when it does happen, then it means so much more. And I made Fried Barry out of pure frustration, because I had those conversations so many times where somebody says, oh yeah, we'll do a film with you, oh yeah, yeah, we like this script, and then nothing ever happens. And that's what made me, you know, Fried Barry was born out of pure frustration of, I'm going to do it myself. I'm not waiting for anybody else. I'm going to do it. And then because of that, I got this opportunity. And because of Fried Barry did well, I got this opportunity. And I guess, yes, I do believe in myself. And I guess I haven't really got a life when it comes to other things. And I just love doing what I do. And I just want to keep on working and keep pushing myself and love it, you know.
So tell us, what is next for you? Street Trash is new as of this conversation. You mentioned that black and white number with Gary Green. What else do you have your nose in for the rest of the year and on through 2025?
At the moment now, I'm working on that black and white feature. There is a few other films lined up, but it depends which happens first. The Fried Barry short, that was the original short that I did before Fried Barry, and then it became feature. But yeah, it's one of those things now where I'm just looking at feature films, and here and there I like to do my experimental films. So I'm actually releasing a collection of experimental films that I've shot over the past 7 years. So I'm releasing that in the next month or so. And yeah, a lot of them have been to film festivals, but the only one that's online is the Fried Barry short film that was from 2017. So yeah, it's been a long process of these experimentals, but finally I actually just, you know, I just want to release it and get it out there.
All right, Ryan, before I get you out of here, go ahead and plug your website and your social media anywhere the good folks listening to this fine radio program can find you.
Yeah, just go to Facebook, Ryan Kruger, it should come up. Instagram, at a Ryan Kruger thing, same as Twitter. Check out Street Trash. Let me know what you think, and drop me a line.
Ryan Kruger, thank you so much for your time today on Massacre Radio. All the best to you in the future, and look forward to seeing you win many, many more awards, my man.
I really appreciate having me on.
Massacre. Well, there you have it. Another episode of Massacre Radio is in the books as we rapidly approach the 50th episode. Special thanks again to my guest today, Ryan Krueger. The man is incredibly talented, and he believes in his convictions and moves with a purpose. I think there's a little something we can all learn from the words of Ryan Krueger. So until next time, I've been Members Only Dave. Thanks for joining us, and as always, I'll talk at you next week.
Galaxy and the universe is so fucking big.